good morning. You're on Talkback.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I just have a brief question. Do you... You're a council person, right?
We both are.
Yes.
Oh, you are. Oh, well, I don't know if this is the right place to ask, but what does a person do, the procedure, if they would like to challenge a ordinance?
Starts with a letter to the city.
Write a letter to the city.
And is there some particular... like a template to go by or something?
No, you can just write it in your own words.
Okay.
Where do you live? You don't have to give me the exact address.
They call it Ward 1, I guess.
Okay, Ward 1. So the best thing would be to write a letter to your counselor.
Okay.
And your counselor is Chuck Redfern.
Okay.
Or Jan Manwaring.
Jan Manwaring, yes.
And right. You write a letter and just tell them what you disagree with.
Okay.
And then it will be discussed. It will be sent to whatever committee it's appropriate to be sent to. And they will let you know, the city clerk's office will let you know that it's being discussed on thus and such a time. And you'll be invited to come and you can speak.
Okay.
And,
you want to tell us which ordinance you disagree with?
The one I'm thinking of is the bicycle registration ordinance.
Oh, okay. What do you have to register a bicycle?
Yeah, I guess it's pretty much, you're supposed to register a bicycle.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with that at all.
I'm not either. There used to be. I know there used to be. When I was much younger, there was a bicycle. I remember taking my kids down to register their bicycles.
But it was voluntary in case your bike was stolen or lost, right?
Well, it wasn't then, but it is now.
My experience, I had an experience with it. I was riding my bicycle on the sidewalk, which everyone knows you're not supposed to do. and I did get a ticket for it. But they also put on that my bicycle wasn't registered and added that to it. So
did you pay an extra fine for it? Did you pay an extra fine for that?
I don't recall. I just know that they did add it on.
Huh.
And it was an ordinance still in the books and everything like that.
Well.
So do I write the letter to Mr. Redfern or do I write it to, I'm not sure, I'm not clear, the mayor or the mayor?
You could write it to, you could send it just to the city council if you wanted to, mayor and city council, and you would send it to 3 Washington Street.
Okay.
And the city clerk would get that, and she would send it to whatever committee. We would just discuss it in, not discuss it, but it would just be brought up in council.
Okay.
And it would be on the communications. They'd say, we have a communication from so-and-so about such-and-such. And then the mayor would refer it to whatever committee takes care of that, handles that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And then it would come up in the committee meeting and...
Do I make my argument in the letter, or just that I didn't like the ordinance?
Well, you might just explain why.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have to go into great detail, just explain to them, what...
I understand.
What happened.
And include your contact information so they can invite you to that committee meeting.
And your phone number.
All right, will do.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot, and have a great day.
Right,
thank you.
Calling. Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 357-1290 is our number this morning. If anyone wants to call, you can do that. Also, if anyone knows, I didn't think there was a... I know you can register your bicycle. I didn't know that you had to register your bicycle, and that would be...
I've been in violation. I'll tell you that.
Who knows? But anyway, good morning. You're on Talkback.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys have been around long enough. Every politician says those types of things. Every one of them. Democrats and Republicans alike always say that stuff. That's nothing new.
But they should I will say, not I.
I agree that, I don't know, they all say that. Anyway, I agree that there are probably some reforms we made in healthcare, but I'll tell you what, my issue with all of the politics and everything is, one, we're so polarized with everything, but we need to start as Americans, not politicians or parties or whatever.
Right.
You know, we live beyond our means.
Great point.
I've repeatedly said this. You know, we have to have everything. You know, our poverty level is not poverty level. Our poverty level includes everybody in the household having cell phones and having internet access on your cell phone, having 500 channels of television, having, beer and pot and, toys and, video games and computers for everybody, and, you know, I mean, just it goes on and on and on and on. And but we don't want to pay for health care, and we want the best health care. And, you know, this is an issue for me. I mean, I've heard more and more people talk about, oh, I can't afford, you know, I got to either feed my family or pay my heat. And while they're telling you this, while they're talking on their cell phone, you know, it's like, give it a break.
That's
As Americans, we are living beyond our means, and that's just plain and simple.
And everybody has to have it immediately. You know, back in the day,
the instant gratification.
Yeah,
that's
when
right.
We used to, we wanted something, we would
save
cut
for
back
it.
And try to save for it so that we could pay for it. And they don't do that now. They just
don't. And so, and we're all guilty of it to some extent, you know. But we do. We, as Americans, we need to look inside of ourselves and say, hey, what can we do without here? You know, how can we scale back and maybe live within our means? And we just don't do that. And particularly, and this is, you know, one of the issues I believe that we've come to is by offering more and more programs, we are enabling people to get to that point. And that becomes a problem in itself. And I'm not, don't get me wrong here, I believe people need help from time to time. And I don't have a problem with helping people at all. But we get to a point where we just enable our citizens to become bums.
And
or we enable them to abuse the system to the point where, that's right, that's what we have. We're not, it's not poverty anymore. It's beyond, living beyond our means. And that's what it comes down to.
And people keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
It is. And your
debit gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
No one person is going to stand up and do it with all the best intentions. Even if they get all the right, even if they have the exact perfect plan to fix everything, they can't do it by themselves, you know?
Right.
And you're absolutely right. You nailed it on the head with that, you know? And we really need to, and I'm not sure how to do that, but as an American population, we need to change collectively.
And maybe we all need to cut back a little bit. But that would be, if the government said, okay, everybody has to cut back now, one out of every two people would say, well, they don't need me. They don't mean me. And, you know, so maybe some people would be cutting back and some people would be spending more.
That's true.
I don't know why that happens, but it does. And
you know, we have people that go to the community kitchen for their meals, but yet at home they have a widescreen TV with and they have their Premier cable level and everything else. You know, it's you know, I think
you got to save somewhere.
That's right.
So anyway, thank you very much.
Sure,
anything
thanks.
Else? Okay, I think that's. I don't know. I mean, the community kitchen certainly serves a wonderful meal, but it also serves a wonderful purpose. And there are many people that are there that are using it, you know, and need it.
And thank God for them, because that would be a strain on the city if they weren't there.
Right. And that was actually one of the things that for years I didn't want to give. We give to nonprofits.
Right.
And I just felt it was not my place as a counselor to tell the people out there in Keene what they should be spending on giving. And we were taking a certain amount out of their taxes and giving it to nonprofits. And I thought, you know, I just don't think this is right. And I voted against it for years. And then...
Well, the approach to that is, if they weren't there, would the city have to pay for that, have subsidized that in another way?
And someone came in and made that. They had a committee to take a look
at
this. And they had, you know, people come in and talk to the committee and show what it was. And, you know, like...
So there's an offset.
An offset to this. And I think that that's something that most people don't realize, that if we didn't help support the community kitchen, they couldn't do as good a job. They couldn't serve as many people. More people would be coming for food stamps or for food money to buy groceries and things like that. So I think that's a really important thing. But good morning. You're on Talk Back.
Hey, good morning. It's Ian from FreeKeene.com. How are you?
Good morning, Ian.
Hey, great. A couple weeks ago, Chuck Redfern called in to respond to Brett from the School Sucks podcast, who had called to have a discussion with you guys regarding the government schools. And his example for why he thought that government schools were great is because, well, there are successful people that come out of them. And certainly that's a valid thing to say, is that many successful people have come from the government school system. But that's not evidence to support coercing people into paying for something. just because there is a positive result from a government program isn't a justification for the way that program or the way the government is set up regarding funding those programs. So what we could have in a free market of schools is better overall students, people who are more successful in general. To point to government schools and say, well, successful people have come from them, isn't really saying much, because if all of this government schools suck, well, inevitably some people are going to be more successful than others when they come out of those schools. But it's certainly the case that people could be generally better educated than they currently are. In fact, if you look at all the numbers, when government got into education, especially the federal government in the 1950s, over the years, the money they've spent has increased and the test scores continue to go down. It doesn't have anything to do with people being dumber these days. It's just a matter of the system and the way it's designed. In the absence of coercion, we could have real competition, and each set of parents would be able to decide for themselves where to send their kids, and you could get the exact kind of education that you were looking for rather than having to settle for a one-size-fits-all system. So those are my thoughts on that. What do you think?
Are you talking about higher education, state-supported colleges?
No, I'm talking about mostly the fully coercive system where everyone is forced to pay for elementary and middle and high school, but to some extent state-supported colleges, to a lesser extent.
Okay, right. So you're talking about the whole package then, the whole schooling package, okay.
Right. Yeah, because it's all based on coercion, and whenever you use force, aggressive force against peaceful people, you always end up with consequences. And many of them are, in some cases, the absolute opposite of what your original intentions were. So the idea would be to change that aspect of it, and then let people decide for themselves how to save or to spend or to give away the money that they earn.
It's one of those things, Ian, that works in theory, but when you come down to it, I think if people had a choice of whether they wanted to send their kids to public school or private school or charter schools or homeschools, that eventually public schools would lose their effectiveness.
Well, they're not effective right now.
I think they are in some cases. I think they are in some cases. I mean, I've got children and grandchildren that did very well in school and have done
well. I know people that have done well, too, and I come from the government school system as well. But the thing I don't know, Cynthia, is how much better I could have done, is how much more excited I could have been about learning in an environment where things would have been different. A lot of kids have their interest in education sucked out of them by the government education system because it doesn't inspire them, and they're not interested in the classes and the lectures or whatever kind of teaching styles that they have. So things could be better. And for those of us that look at the government school system and say, yeah, this isn't so great, we don't want to support it, well, there's always that ultimate threat of losing your home if you decide you don't want to support it. So it's that fact that people can't choose. They don't have the option. And that really hurts the system. And it's hard to see that from, the inside of it where we all are. But not allowing people to make choices for themselves really does damage.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't get my head around it to not have some sort of government-supported schools. I mean, I'm sure.
Well, he makes a valid point. I just don't know if we'll ever know the answer.
Yeah,
you could have publicly supported schools, just done on a consensual basis, where people would give to that school on a voluntary basis. I mean, look at the United Way, for instance. They're busily raising, I think it's $2 million this year, to get the various different charities in the area. The money exists that's being poured into these government schools. That money's, coming from us. It's just that we aren't able to choose how much to give and to whom to give it. So, I might want to support a school that doesn't have a religious curriculum, for instance, whereas some parents would want to support a school with a religious curriculum. And with the government school system, we're all forced to support the same curriculum, whether we like it or not. So, it, you know, it would work if it were given the opportunity, because people do care about their fellow man. And somebody like me, who doesn't even have kids, I'm still interested in education. I want to see people succeed because it benefits the entire society. The thing that doesn't benefit society is threatening people with the violence of stealing their home from them. Anyway, thank you for your time today.
Thanks. Thank you.
Anyway, about schools, I heard an earlier caller talking. I couldn't restrain my laughter. But the notion that a voluntary system, you know, it would work really, really well if it was tried. It was tried for, you know, a few thousand years in the Dark Ages before we even had a middle class. I mean, your capacity for making your way successfully through life is to a great degree defined by how much you know. And one of the reasons why there were even more people in poverty for thousands and thousands of years was because education wasn't accessible to the vast right. majority of people. It was only for the elites. That was a voluntary, you know, there was no coercion then. Only, actually, there was a sort of coercion. There was a societal coercion. If you had the bad luck to be born, not to be born of the royal class or of the nobility, you didn't get an education.
Right.
You know,
or if you had the misfortune to be born a girl.
Right. And by the way, the United Way is an example. Tell me, how far would $2 million go in terms of supporting the school system in Keene?
Right.
$2
million. Right. It couldn't begin to.
No. And finally, in terms of, I always love this thing, is that, well, money doesn't make a difference. Let me tell you something. My daughter, pretty bright kid, she was lucky, she got a big scholarship to go down to prep school at Andover. I couldn't afford to send her there out of my own pocket. But the tuition there per year is $42,000. Now, it's a great school. I don't think the fact that it costs that much to have that facility and the fact that it's a great school, I don't think those are disconnected.
Mm-hmm. No, that's it.
No.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah. You know, so now it's not, money isn't the only thing. I would never argue that. But there's, look, there was going to be a big difference between sending her to school there and sending her to Fall Mountain. You know, it was a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just because of the sheer amount of money.
Right.
But I just think if you really want to have a society where the vast majority were basically, I don't know, something like 5%, even less during most of human history, had access to a basic education. If you want to live in that world, we have tried it before.
Right.
Okay? So we actually know how that so-called voluntary system works. I would venture to say not too well. And indeed, it was incredibly coercive.
Yes.
For the vast, vast majority of human beings.
Okay.
So I'll leave it at that.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
357-1290. Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's Sam Dotson from Free Keene.
Good morning, Sam.
You know, these alarmists are just pretty comical. I mean, the guy's getting on there making a self-defeating argument. He's saying that it's a voluntary system with a lot of coercion. Well, you couldn't have a voluntary system if people are being coerced. It kind of defeats your initial statement. And then he had to go back to, what was it, the Middle Ages, to say that, well, we had no education system and looked at how that worked. I mean, what would they be teaching in the Middle Ages? How to use leeches and drill holes in people's head to cure diseases? I mean, really, is that the only argument? Whereas, if you look in today's context, if you listen to people like John Taylor Gatto, who was New York State Teacher of the Year, he went around and he studied all of the schools where the kids, the parents are spending $100,000 a year to educate their kids. And he learned that they're not doing anything different with the money. Sure, the money buys additional surroundings and better facilities and that sort of thing. But what really made the most successful private schools stand out was the way that they taught the kids to learn.
Right.
And he was a school teacher for, you know, decades, and he speaks out against the public schools, the way that they teach them. He points out that the money that you put in front of the public schools and that you give them, the worse they perform. And if you look at like John Stossel's special on the public school system, he took the standardized tests that the U.S. kids take over to Sweden, and they thought, man, and these tests are in English, so these guys are using a second language, which most of the American kids, the school system, can't teach them to read and write in another language. But yet here the kids in Sweden or wherever it was are taking these tests and saying, this is easy. These guys must be dumb if they can't pass these tests. So, and of course, if you look at the economic index, the U.S. school system, amongst all the others, it's not in the top 10, not in the top 20, not in the top 30. It's below 50. So you're out. Hey, we got to keep funding and keep this greatest school system going, which is ranked below the top 50. So what's the real point here? And the issue at its core is always coercion. Going to tell me you need to take loans, put people on the street in order to pay for your system that is just so great.
We'll take it up again next week. Okay.
Thank you
very
calling.
Much. Thank you, Phil, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Love to have you here.